Remember, Katrina, you must call me Doctor.
Have you ever thought what it's like to be wanderers in the fourth dimension? To be exiles?
This is the Doctor speaking. Well, one of them. Is there anybody there?
I hate computers and refuse to be bullied by them.
And their leader was called?
The Doctor.
Are you trying to tell us that you are the Doctor?
That's right. I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow so the TARDIS will be free of the force field.
You may be a Doctor, but I'm the Doctor. The definite article, you might say. Would you like a jelly baby?
I'm a Time Lord.
I'm the Doctor. Or will be if this regeneration works out.
And it seems on a moment too soon.
How do you do? I'm the Doctor.
I am the Doctor!
I'm the Doctor, by the way. What's your name?
Rose.
Nice to meet you, Rose. Run for your life.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm the Doctor.
I'm Aldi.
Hello, I'm the Doctor.
Great eyes are cool.
It's not working.
We're both reversing the polarity.
Yes, I know that.
There's two of us. I'm reversing it, you're reversing it back again. We're confusing the polarity.
Anyone lose a fez?
Hello, welcome to the TARDIS Blend, everyone, for episode 2 of series 8 of Doctor Who here at geeksofdoom.com. My name is Greg Davies, and I'm joined with
Tom Cheridar.
Yes, sir. And tonight, Tom, we have a very special guest in the TARDIS tonight. I thought I lost him by the swimming pool, but it turns out he was trying to look for the little inflatable pool with plastic balls in it, but that was at DashCon. Andrew Sorsini, ladies and gentlemen. How are you doing, Andy?
I'm great. Actually, I was looking for the light switch, and I started that.
I was hoping someone would grab that line, by the way. That's fantastic. Well, here we are, episode 2 of, Peter Capaldi's second full episode as the Doctor. His debut.
You mean his first full episode as the Doctor? Don't you mean?
Well, no.
Like a full-fledged doctor reacts like the Doctor.
Well, yes, I suppose you could say that. But it you know, for all intents and purposes,
foreshadowing.
We'll call it yes.
Sorry.
So, I am going to hand it over to you, Tom, into the Dalek. As always, your reactions, please.
I love this episode. I loved it. I thought it was awesome. It was not the best episode, but seeing as I didn't really enjoy the last one. This one I really liked. I could see it as I could see the potential as Peter Capaldi as the Doctor, and it made me really excited.
Oh, he continues to excel in this episode, doesn't he? I mean, and then just the delivery of like many of his lines in the episode, you know, we're just like, if you close your eyes, he's delivering lines in his own style, but he's also channeling some of the classic Doctors in there. I'm detecting a little bit of a Tom Baker tone here and there, particularly in his ongoing bickering between himself and Clara. That's very, very Tom Baker and Sarah Jane Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Very
mm-hmm.
much like that. Andy, what was your reaction? What do you think of this new episode?
I loved it. I thought it was, because, you know, it, traditionally with a new Doctor, you've got the first episode, which is really sort of like a feeling his oats, you know, like getting his sea legs
yeah.
kind, Doctor episode, and by the second episode, you can expect that we're in full Doctor mode. And I felt like we were in full Doctor mode in this episode. You could see, you can get a hint of what we expect to see for the rest of the season with this particular Doctor. I really enjoyed the sort of high concept of this episode, and if this seems familiar to anybody, the basic plot of this episode is essentially the same as the 1966 Richard Fleischer film Fantastic Voyage.
Mm-hmm.
And even more recently, there was an episode with the fourth Doctor with Tom Baker called The Invisible Enemy.
The first Doctor, actually, they, I think it was in 63 or 64, they actually did an episode, Planet of the Giants or something like that. But it was basically the TARDIS had malfunctioned and shrunk them. So, you know, it does harken back to a lot of different archetypal movies that we have seen before, indeed within the confines of Doctor Who itself. I mean, there's parallels in this particular episode with previous Doctor Who episodes as well. I mean, the most obvious for newer fans was the Chris Eccleston episode of Dalek. I mean, it was almost, you know, the skeleton of the story was almost like a carbon copy of that. And they just fleshed it out differently from there. But there was, I also noticed there were some parallels with the classic Tom Baker episode, Genesis of the Daleks. And in some ways, there were some opposites in there as well, because in Genesis, the Doctor has an opportunity to destroy the evil Daleks. But in this, he has an opportunity to create good ones.
Yeah.
So I thought that was an interesting kind of tip of the seesaw, if you will.
Right, but is there such a thing as a good Dalek? Is the question.
Well, according to the Dalek, the Doctor is now a good Dalek.
Right, which is really the worst kind of backhanded compliment slap in the face.
I'm not so sure. I think there's actually there's a lot in that as much as it's loaded. I mean, one of the best scenes in this particular episode was the "Am I a good man?" scene.
Right.
The conversation that he has with Clara. I mean, this series seems to be, you know, there's a dash of existentialism in there. You know, it's been thrown in there. The series also seems to be a bit darker as well, very much like Philip Hinchcliffe's first couple of seasons with Tom Baker, whereas Hinchcliffe kind of went for an archetypal horror classic feel, classic horror feel. Moffat's new season seems to be going for more of a modern anti-hero slash horror angle, and I'm okay with that. I'm absolutely okay with that.
Yeah, no, I'm same here. I'd love to see a little darker Doctor,
yeah.
You know, especially one where he's introspective and really torn, you know, emotionally torn about whether he is causing more destruction than he is helping.
Right.
And we've seen that with the Doctor along the way. In previous episodes, touched upon here and there, you know, but I think we're really going to get to explore it this season, particularly with the focus on "Am I a good man?" As we seem to have in the first couple episodes.
Yeah, that's going to be an undercurrent theme, I believe. I want to throw out there Michael Smiley playing the colonel or the general or whatever his rank was in. I think he was a colonel.
Sure.
Oh, what a wonderful treat to see him in an episode of Doctor Who. I don't know if anybody knows who he is, but he's well known among Simon Pegg and Edgar Wright fans. He was a regular on the television series Spaced that Edgar Wright directed, and he's been in a few other movies and television shows since then.
I think hasn't he been in at least a couple of the Cornetto trilogy movies?
Yes, he was a priest, I think, in the last one they did, the World's End.
And then he was in Hot Fuzz. I don't remember if he was in Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, he had a cameo as a zombie in that, I think. So he's been in all of them. I mean, the Cornetto trilogy by Edgar Wright was kind of like a continuation of Spaced anyway. So now we've had Simon Pegg in Doctor Who. We've had Michael Smiley in Doctor Who. We've also had, who else was in Spaced?
What's his name? Craig. Our buddy Craig.
Let me see here.
Oh, he wasn't in Space, though.
Oh, Jessica Stevenson was in Doctor Who as well. She played... she was in that double episode with the Family of Blood from the David Tennant era, where she played one of the teachers in the school that the human doctor fell in love with. So Simon Pegg, Jessica Stevenson, and Michael Smiley. Where's Nick Frost? We need Nick Frost in a Doctor Who.
I'd love to see Nick Frost in a...
And Bill Bailey as well. Bill Bailey was in Spaced as well. He was in Doctor Who as well. So, yeah, come on, Moffat, bring in Nick. Yeah, we need him in there. We absolutely need him in there. Tom, anything else that grabbed your attention that you really enjoyed in this episode?
Oh my God, there's just so much. I was watching this episode. It's funny, and I was thinking that, like, man, I bet Andy's gonna like this episode. I don't know why. But I just did. I don't know. There's just so much to love. Like it's got you've got the Doctor establishing himself as a more serious, more curmudgeon-y candidate who, you know, they've implied that the human companion is how the Doctor can feel and remember things. But I feel like they're going to take that to the extreme this time, and I love that line between the Doctor and Jenna Coleman, where she just said, "What I bring you along? I'm the carer."
Oh yeah, yeah.
I love that. I love that. I thought it was. She's
great. The one who cares,
so he doesn't have to.
So he doesn't have to.
Yes,
yeah. I loved it.
Brilliant little aside there.
A little bit of a geek note as well. When they did shrink and they entered the eye stalk of the Dalek, once they passed the eye stalk and went into the cranial cavity, there was a bit of incidental music in the background. It's like an electronic heartbeat, like dun 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 dun. That's actually setting music that was used for, you know, Dalek bases in classic Doctor Who. I just totally geeked out at that moment. It was fantastic. I really, really, really loved this episode. I thought it was good.
I thought it should have been called Journey to the Center of Dalek.
Yeah, I thought about that myself. Yeah,
it was awesome, and I love that he pointed out. He's like, "I have never been here again, and I may never get back."
Yeah,
I have to use this moment
On the Daleks. A couple of things I want to point out about them this episode. I thought it was really nice to actually see a couple of Daleks get like destroyed by the humans for a change. Because usually you tend to see them like, oh yeah, there's a couple of them blew up. Yeah.
I thought that was a Dalek shooting the Daleks.
That was later in the episode, but when the humans were fighting against them, I mean, their weapons are still useless, but they're better than what they were in the previous season. So it's nice to see a couple of Daleks exploding because of human intervention for a change.
What did you guys think about the towards the end where I don't remember the supporting character. She shows up on a few other British programs. Fresh Meat comes to mind. She comes in and she wants to join the Doctor, and he said, "I'm sure you're a great person, but if you'd only not been a soldier, that we've just been introduced to this new teacher."
Yes, Dalek, Danny Pink. Danny Pink is the new character. I don't have the actor's name in front of me. I'm sorry.
Samuel Anderson.
Thank you. He's going to be the new companion.
Yeah, but weren't you talking about Journey Blue? Because he was talking to the woman.
Journey Blue. Yes, that is correct.
Yeah, she's a parallel. So this whole episode was setting up Danny Pink's character, really, and where the Doctor kind of stands with soldiers. One of the most important things, if you look back at the history of the Doctor, is one of his closest friends was Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart, who was a soldier. But he was a person first, soldier second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that was what most important about this episode. I think Pink, she was, Blue, Journey Blue, she was a soldier first and foremost. And that's how she introduced herself to the Doctor, by holding a gun to him.
You know, do you think there's a parallel here between Pink and Blue? Is there?
Yeah, I don't.
I think
is there a spectrum? Like, if you the inverse of Blue is Pink, or I don't know.
Well, that's actually true. The inverse of Blue, which is a cool color, would be Red, which is a warm color. So in this case, we're using that name to highlight that even though Danny Pink is a soldier, he is a person first. and he's wrestling with what he did as a soldier. Clearly, I mean, he's like the Stephen Moffat, John Watson of this series of Doctor Who.
Yeah, I really like that. I just really like that character. I think immediately just taken to him. You know?
Right, right. This, incidentally, this is also, I believe, I could be wrong about this, but in New Who, this is the first time we've had a dual writing credit. Usually an episode is written by one individual writer. This time it was co-written between two writers.
You know, Greg, it's funny you say that. I actually skipped through to the next few episodes. You have to go a long while before you get to one that doesn't have Stephen Moffat's name on it.
Oh. Well, how did you skip ahead?
Ways.
And then IMDb or something?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly where I saw it. Yeah. I just remember the credits for the names. Like he's writing a significant portion of this season, which is not unprecedented.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I think I think what he's actually doing this time, by the feel of it anyway, I think he wrote all the school scenes with Danny Pink and Clara, and he's doing all of those external stuff, that external bits and pieces, and integrating it into the episodes, which is my guess. Maybe. I mean, I have no idea, but we'll see how that pans out. I love the Dalek antibodies.
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty cool. And also the revulsion part of the episode, which was where they were swimming around in dead bits.
Yes, yeah. that made me want to vomit, probably. I liked it.
Light little reference to the Eighth Doctor's TV movie, Breaking Out of a Mortuary, and the quote, "I lived a life," or "I've lived a life," is a line that was spoken by Paul McGann in the Eighth Doctor's television movie in 1996. So that was a nice little tip of the hat there from Moffat there in the writing, I believe.
You see the whenever he shared his mind with the Dalek, they had that flashback scene where he had destroyed the Dalek. You know, I it may not have been because it was really quickly, but I feel like they had that scene where the Doctor just went crazy and blew up the Cybermen as well.
Yeah,
in the background, but
there was a lot of that in the final scene. You know, actually, that leads me to the bad bits of the episode that I was a little critical of. And the first thing is,
let's hear it.
There's a massive plot hole in here. And that is that when Rusty becomes a pure Dalek again, he starts waging on about how the Daleks must exterminate and blah, blah, blah. But he still allows the little people to crawl around inside him. That's a little weak. You know what I'm saying?
I don't think he can do anything about it.
Oh, I don't know.
They'd even talked about it. He's like, I thought the Dalek was our friend when he was there. And he's like, could you control your antibodies? And everybody just kind of looked up and like, nope.
Maybe that addressed it. I felt that it didn't. I'm sure that a Dalek has got some internal security for, destroying cockroaches.
Sure about that. Think about it. Think about how difficult it was for them to get where they were. And how you had to have a Dalek that was completely okay with it.
Mm.
I don't think that it's that easy to pierce them and get inside.
Well, through the eye stalk, obviously, which is why that's their weakest point.
Which, by the way, is the same way that in the Fantastic Voyage that they escaped out of the body that they were placed in.
Through the eye?
Through the tear ducts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, interesting. While I like the Danny Pink stuff, I thought the lady killer stuff was just terrible. You know, you're talking about how, like, he must be a hot guy, you know, banging girls on the weekend and stuff like that. I just felt really unnecessary for the character.
Awkward, didn't it?
Yeah, it just didn't feel like it fit in the episode.
Sure. Really?
No, you like it? I think they
could have gotten away with not doing it, but I definitely liked
it.
I think it supported the fact that he's completely bumbling and, like, stepping over, tripping over his own tongue when he actually does speak to an attractive girl that he's interested in.
Yeah. The other thing I wasn't too keen on, I'm not sure how you guys felt about this, but resistance is futile.
Oh, I chuckled a bit, and then I was like, I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, this whole
get the Borg pop in, then I'm going to just, like, I don't know, my mind may explode.
Well, I mean, what is more Borg than a Dalek in Doctor Who? I mean, they went to great lengths. I mean, the whole thing is, like, very, very, it's borrowed a lot from a lot of Borg Star Trek episodes, this one, including ripping off that particular line. And I kind of felt that, you know, that
which they'd actually, that comic book was actually for the Cybermen teaming up with
Yes, yes. Not
the Daleks, but I can see the Daleks far better than I can see the Cybermen.
Right, right. But even so, I mean, it felt like another unnecessary thing. There's better ways to. I thought there could be better ways to tip the hat to Star Trek without ripping off one of their lines. Do you know what I'm saying?
That is a pretty.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm okay with a little cross fandom, you know, clever nods. I'm okay with that.
You know, it would have been better if they made that guy wear a red shirt or something. You know, that would have been cooler.
Yeah, I would have gotten mad about it if not for – I've been on a marathon, a Golden Girls marathon. Don't ask me why. but the pop culture references, they're really heavy ones. They just – they're completely, like, lost on me. And so I like that there was a little nod there for people who get it, but that it actually made sense and fit into context.
They were already. I like that they had already done a nod to the source movie, Fantastic Voyage, when the Doctor says, "You know, great idea for a movie, terrible for a proctologist."
Oh, I like that too. It's funny. He's funny. He's funny in a different way.
Yeah, this episode did borrow a lot, but there was also a lot about this specific episode that, and by the way, borrowed a lot from previous Doctor Who stuff as well. But it was done in a way, I think, to set up a couple of things that are coming up in the season. Obviously, Danny Pink is the one that stands out the most.
Sure.
But also the whole "Am I a good man?" underlying theme seems to be ongoing. And I think that was also more of a message in this particular episode, where you're comparing the dark side of the Doctor with the light side of a Dalek.
He's a good Dalek.
Right.
Yeah.
Anybody else pause and they were like, "Oh man, you're going super metaphorical."
Oh, one other thing about the Daleks that I was actually kind of happy about this time. And now I was a big fan of the idea of the duplicate humans from the previous season. I thought that was fantastic. I thought it was bringing the Daleks into the 21st century. I thought that was a great idea. But I got to say, I'm really glad they were absent this episode, because it just felt nice to have a breather and see how the humans were reacting to everybody else, to highlight how things have become so tense now that the Dalek duplicates are around in the universe. I thought that was just a wonderful little touch. Take them out, don't show them, but just highlight how things have changed for the humans because of that. And I thought that was really well done.
Yeah, I agree. He said, what did he do? I thought that he said... when the Doctor first came on board, he could be a triplicate. Did I mishear that?
Duplicate, I think it is. Yeah. Okay.
I heard duplicate.
Yeah, okay. I heard duplicate as well. I think that's what they were referred to in the last
triplicate would be cool. I secretly wish Andy's actually correct.
All right. Let me ask you a question, because you guys are probably more versed on the details than I am, but is this the first time that we've seen... When Dalek zaps a human, that you get that sort of skeleton X-ray effect in the zapping?
Because
I don't recall having seen that before.
I feel like that's a super old effect that played really crappy that they brought back.
No, it was. No? They've used the skeletal effect in all of the seasons of the new series, and it actually harkens back to the 1970s with the Daleks.
Ah,
yeah.
So it was actually. What they did in the original series, as things progressed into the 70s and they started getting chroma key screens and things like that happening, what they actually did to highlight an extermination was they would have the Dalek have these little floppy rubber things pop out of its gun, like blowing back and forth, and then they would kind of rotoscope something in there that supposedly looked like a laser, but it really wasn't. When the human was hit with the laser blast, they would invert the frames that they were actually being hit by the Dalek laser, and so you got this negative effect on screen. And so they continued that all the way through, even to this new Doctor Who series, where you've got some form of negative effect and you can see the skeleton.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's been done before. It may have been a bit more prominent this episode, I guess. I mean, I'm kind of used to it now, but...
It was noticeable for me, noticeable enough for me.
Well, that's not necessarily a bad thing. All right, let's jump into the ratings. Andy, you're the guest. What would you rate this episode out of 5?
Out of 5, I would give this a solid... Do half stars count?
Or do I don't think we do for half
no,
stars.
No, we don't do the half.
4, then. Let's give it a 4.
Okay. Tom, your rating.
You know, I if it was fair to give this a higher rating because I did not enjoy the last one, this would be a 5-star episode in my opinion. But it's not. It's a regular episode, and it's a 4, and it's a very solid episode.
Okay, my rating is 4 as well. So that if we added that up, that's works out to be on average 4 out of 5 for all of us. You know, Tom, I was thinking what I might do for each subsequent post at geeksofdoom.com is put in a little chart about our previous ratings for this particular season. So the last one we had 6 out of 10. This would be 8 out of 10. And, you know, we could have, you know, people check it out as we go on.
Yeah, we can do math and stuff.
Yeah, we can do math. The doctor does math. He does it with chalk on chalkboard. Oh, yes. That reminds me as well. Did you catch that in the episode?
You know, I did not mention this last episode, and we glossed over it because I did immensely enjoy this episode. There's one thing that happened in this episode, just like it happened in the last one, that is bugging the crap out of me.
What's that?
What the heck, man? I thought we had established that the sonic screwdriver it's not like a universal tool anymore. Like it's got very specific purposes. It doesn't work on wood, not because it can't, but because the calculations are so crazy. And now he's welding metal with it. He's using it as a pop gun. He's exploding shit. And I'm like, what when did we decide that this is okay?
Well, he's kind of been doing that ever since the return of the Doctor Who to television screens, to be honest with you.
I don't think so.
No, I'm going to have to absolutely disagree with you. I mean, in the original television series, the sonic screwdriver was, as John Hurt implied in the Day of the Doctor,
Since the new series came back, they have established that it doesn't do... Well, I can't say that. I'd say we have not seen it used as fragrantly as we did in these past 2 episodes.
Well, we saw that with Matt Smith in his few seasons.
There was no mass explosions.
Are you kidding me?
There was a computer dashboard that would enable a mass explosion.
No. He would. He was fighting the silence. Don't you remember that Day of the Moon? Yeah, he was using it as a weapon. He was using it as a weapon in his first season against the Silurians. See, the thing is, like, the concept of the sonic screwdriver has changed. In the original classic series, it was, as John Hurt was saying, it was a scientific instrument, a tool that the Doctor can use. But in the current new Doctor Who series, it's become analogous to, like, a magic wand. Or a lightsaber, you know, in some ways. And so it needs... I think, eventually... It's going to get to the point, it probably won't happen under Stephen Moffat's supervision of the show, but I think we're going to have a repeat of Peter Davison at one stage where he goes hands-free for a few seasons.
Interesting. It would be a nice sort of crutch, not a crutch, but a handicap, you know?
Well, right now, the sonic screwdriver is a crutch.
Is a crutch.
Did they ever acknowledge the reason why they did not use the sonic screwdriver with the Seventh Doctor?
Because it was starting to become what it is now in the show, a magic wand.
In context of the show.
It was destroyed. It was destroyed, yeah.
I hope they come up with a cooler way that they do it. Because, you know, they do this in comic books quite a bit. You know, Captain America lost his shield. Wolverine got his adamantium ripped out of his skeleton, so he didn't have metal claws. It could make for an interesting play because I don't ever remember them having entire episodes that things sucked because he didn't have his one weapon.
Yeah.
And that's what it's become. It's become a super weapon in this case. And it's been a point of contention for fans ever since it came back in 2005. So, you know, and I think what's happening here is these past 2 episodes, it's just been a little bit more noticeable to you, Tom.
I think you're right.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. So, but at least it's only used like a couple of times. You know, it's not used like the whole episode. I mean, that would be disastrous.
yet.
But yeah.
Hey, we got a plot hole here. Hold on.
Yeah. Well, Tom Baker used to joke about that in the commentaries for the DVDs, by the way. Like, they would ad-lib scenes, and there was a scene where, like, you know, he and Sarah Jane were supposed to be, like, breaking out of a locked metal prison door or something like that. And they would, you know, the script would just say the Doctor uses his sonic screwdriver to escape. And Tom Baker would go, "Let me use the sonic screwdriver, Sarah." And he uses the sonic screwdriver, and she's like, "But it's not worth working, Doctor. Try it again." "Okay, I'll try it again." And then it works. They had a lot of fun with that.
Can I ask about, there's the big elephant in the room I don't think we've discussed yet. Missy.
Ah, yes. I've got a theory about this, but I'm going to let you guys talk it out, and then I'll go with mine. So,
last week I thought it was maybe the Doctor's foes she was collecting, and here it seems to be his victims, like victims as in ones that the Doctor was personally responsible for having killed. You know,
yes, is. We don't know that he didn't kill that robotic looking.
But
last episode.
That's what I think. See, now it's kind of, we've got two data points to go by.
Yeah.
We know that he was personally responsible for Gretchen's death. And so I guess from that we can assume he was personally responsible for the clockwork guy's death in the last episode.
And he was not, to throw us off, he was not responsible. He absolved himself from that pill that he gave to the one character, the other guard that went down with him.
Yeah, he wasn't rescued by Missy, though. He wasn't. He wasn't
yeah,
taken.
But he also said
yeah.
He was already dead. I just was saving the rest of us.
Yes. Gretchen, on the other hand, and this is the data point that I'm focusing on the most, she sacrificed herself.
Yeah.
And if we go by that, then it could be implied that Half-Face Robot made the decision to fall.
Oh,
and sacrificed himself.
Oh, interesting.
So it could be that Missy is collecting people that have sacrificed themselves in the name of the Doctor. So that's part
a good
of my
point. Dude.
Okay,
but
now
for what purpose do you have
yes, I do indeed. Okay, now this kind of ties into a prevalent theory that a few other fans are throwing around at the moment. But here, I want to talk about the identity of Missy first. Now, there's been a few people speculating about this. One of the most popular theories going around at the moment is that she's the Rani, which was a Time Lord, an evil Time Lord from the classic series. I don't buy that. The one that I believe, Andy, you tweeted or Facebooked about this last week, there's a Missy could be short for Mistress, which is the female equivalent of the Master.
That's right.
I don't believe that's the case at all. Bear with me here. Just hear me out, and it's going to sound a little bit impossible, but go with me here. All of the companions that the Doctor has ever had are somehow, quote-unquote, healed by the Doctor overall. They kind of come in as a blank slate, ask you questions, people, and then when they leave the Doctor, they're a better person because of it. The only exception I can think of is Donna Noble, because, you know, she had to have her memory erased and so on and so forth. However, one of the things that struck me in the previous episode was the Impossible Girl advert in the newspaper. Presumably that was put in by Missy. How does Missy know that Clara is the Impossible Girl? And how did she know to get Clara in contact with the Doctor last season?
That is a good question.
Bear with me here. The Impossible Girl, being Clara, is the impossible companion, okay? If you look at this particular episode, like most of the episodes, it's the Doctor that teaches the companions.
Uh-huh.
But in this episode, it was her that was teaching him. That's a first. Now, they usually balance him out. This time, she was actually teaching him. She was teaching him that the impossible was possible. So my argument is, the impossible companion is not going to be quote-unquote healed overall and become a better person because of it. She's going to become a worse person because of it. I think Missy has something to do with Clara, if not Clara herself.
Yes, I was going to say, is she
interesting? Clara? Interesting.
Now, here's the other prevalent theory that's been bumping around this week, okay? Mm-hmm. Do you guys know who the Valyard is?
I'm unfamiliar with the
Valyard. Why do I know that name?
Okay, the Valyard was a Time Lord lawyer in the Sixth Doctor era.
Who it is, yeah.
And it was in the time the Trial of a Time Lord series that this was happening in. And he was basically putting the Doctor on trial for his quote-unquote crimes. This isn't the first time that the Doctor's been put on trial. I mean, there's been a few other times that this has happened. The Valyard turns out to be a manifestation that was created from the regeneration of the Doctor. If memory serves, it was between the 12th and 13th Doctor, so we could have already seen it, and then the Valyard gets away off screen. I have no idea. But that being said, I think Missy, Clara or not Clara, is a Valyard-like character seeking to put the Doctor on trial, collecting those who have died in his name, sacrifice themselves in his name, to determine whether he is a good man.
And not giving them context by telling and making them think that it's dead, that all of these people that are, I'm assuming, witnesses, oh, you're dead. You're dead. You can't go back. We saved you. This is paradise. But what do you think about this sacrifice that you made for the Doctor? You know, not telling them they're actually alive.
But what if Missy is the equivalent of, like, Q from Star Trek? What if she, you know, what if Clara manifests in some way, probably because she went into the Doctor's timeline as the Impossible Girl?
It explains and then why she, they stole the one line as sort of a
clue, maybe?
Yeah, perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know how deep they get, but that's something.
Yeah. But I think I think Missy is very tied to Clara. I think she is, if she's not Clara, she's a manifestation from Clara. And I think she's very connected to her, and she's seeking revenge against the Doctor because she's the Impossible Girl, a.k.a. the Impossible Companion, the one that will not become better because of the Doctor.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Is that related
to... Blowing my mind here, Greg.
Is that related to what we know about what becomes of Clara being turned into a Dalek or in the... mind of it trapped in a Dalek?
Well, remember, that was as a result of her entering the Doctor's time stream.
Yeah,
in his tomb.
I think they're going to treat that as if it didn't exist.
I'm
in
not sure.
To future stories.
I'm not sure. It's hard
Man,
to
I
say.
I really hope they do, though. It's so confusing.
Hmm.
You know, like, to keep up with that. Oh, yeah, I remember. Now she's got. There's 12 of her. Like, it makes sense if you're focused on that. If you're not focused on it, it just sort of, like, confuses everything.
Gotta say, it leads up to, in the real world, it leads up to a great possibility that after she leaves the series, that, you know, it gives her a possibility to return at some stage as a completely different character that's, you know, caused by Clara entering the Doctor's time stream from the name of the Doctor. You know?
Yeah.
That would be interesting. I mean, that's possible. Anything's possible at this stage. But that's my game. I think Missy is some kind of incarnation of Clara with Q-like powers who wants to be the Valyard. If she's not the Valyard, I have no idea.
We do know that, and they have mentioned that we are going to get to see... I don't know if we'll get to see it this season, but they've mentioned that there will be references to the saved homeworld of the Doctor.
Yeah,
it's still around.
Yeah, now that's interesting because my original prediction was this series was going to be completely about that it was going to be a long ongoing story about that. But so far we've had nothing about Gallifrey in this series. So I think, I've been thinking about this a lot this weekend. Next year is the 10th anniversary of the new series. So I think maybe Moffat's saving it for Series 9.
Wow, the 10th anniversary, that's crazy.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? I think he's saving it for that. I mean, that's a great marketing point for the BBC. I mean, they would probably like want him to push it back, and so, you know, he gets to flesh out a couple of unanswered questions this particular season, create a few new questions, and also, you know, set up new characters and let Peter Capaldi have some room to breathe in the role.
Yeah.
You know, and that makes a lot of sense to me now that I'm talking about it out loud. But I think the Gallifrey quest is probably going to come next season, not this one. Though the references will probably be dropped throughout the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, one thing I will say, I'm getting the feeling at the moment, the way Moffat's dropping in the character of Missy every episode so far, I have a feeling that the end of this particular season is going to be like the conclusion of Series 6, which was a complete mind-bender. You know, the final and the first question, who is the Doctor? Doctor Who?
Sure.
You know, and everybody was left, you know, scratching their head going, what the hell are they talking about? You know, it just feels like that we're heading for something like that, where we get a resolution in the series finale, but it's going to open up all kinds of questions that are going to make people go, oh, we have to wait for Series 9 for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, we've gone on for a little bit, folks. Guys, any final thoughts before we go into our Doctor Who recommendations before we close off?
Nope.
Andy?
No. I just it makes me anxious for the rest of this show. And as we've seen that we've got Robin Hood coming up, so I'm excited about that.
Oh, no, that I don't know how I feel about that.
No.
Yeah,
but don't forget that. Episodes like this where you see a little bit of something and you think, oh, it seems too contrived, there's always like a second layer to it. Like, remember Let's Kill Hitler, which was totally not about Hitler at all?
Yeah. I felt the same way, actually, about the preview for this episode last week. Because the first thing I thought of was like, oh, Daleks again? Come on, you know. But, you know, it turned out way better than I expected. Right. And, you know, maybe you're right, Andy. You know, although I will say one thing I am enjoying extremely with this season so far is that the little teaser trailers that they're putting out for each episode, absolutely, like, well done in the sense that it doesn't seem to be giving any plot away. Like,
they're not spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I agree. I think maybe you might be right, Andy. Well, there we go, folks. 4 out of 5 for us on this particular episode. Classic Doctor Who recommendation from me. I think I'm going to recommend Genesis of the Daleks again. Why not? It's the favorite of all the fans of the classic series. It is a defining moment for Tom Baker and for Elizabeth Sladen as Sarah Jane Smith. It's totally worth checking out, and it ties in very closely with this particular episode as well. Tom, do you have any new Doctor Who series recommendations for our fans?
I would say go back. I don't know if this is, I think it's maybe the second episode of the new season. Again, harkening back, I think the last one I did the same thing, where they first meet the Dalek and they freak out underground where the...
Oh, yes. Yeah, the episode was just called Dalek from Christopher Eccleston's first series, or only series, I should say. Andy, what about you? Do you have a Doctor Who recommendation, classic or modern, for our listeners?
Classic, I'm going to once again recommend The Invisible Enemy, which was a Fourth Doctor episode from in 1977, I believe. And that's where the Doctor gets a virus and has to go inside his own body to defeat it.
I just had a flashback from that episode, by the way. It took me a while to trigger exactly what it was, but there's a lot of actually like revolutionary effects that they did in that episode. Not necessarily revolutionary effects overall, but revolutionary for Doctor Who, that they were doing with Chroma Key at the time. Mm-hmm. Actually, some fascinating work that they did with that particular episode. Yeah, very good. Did you have a modern Doctor Who recommendation?
No. Just rewatching that old one, I would say it would cover it for me.
Absolutely. Okay, folks. Well, let's go ahead and close out of our episode this week of The TARDIS Blend. We will be back. Tom and I will be back next week. Tom, where can we catch you on the web?
You know, here and there.
Go
read Greg's stuff.
Well, you can catch me at blendover.com. And Andy, you do the podcast The Drill Down, which is also at geeksofdoom.com. Where can we catch that, and where can we find you on the web?
You can go to geeksofdoom.com, and the Drill Down banner for our podcast is in the right-hand sidebar. Also, you can just go to thedrilldown.com and check out the links there.
And you can also find The Drill Down, The TARDIS Blend, and Blend Over at iTunes. My other podcast, Heavy Metal Historian, is coming to iTunes soon. We're waiting on that. Happy Labor Day holiday to everyone in the United States. We'll catch you next week for another edition of The TARDIS Blend. Alonzi!